the same time of the original, but the Nasri would be subject to a different time of its own.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Where are we right now? Yeah. Okay. So now we said that doesn't apply to the substitute for an Ola or Fishlamin because they're going to be sacrificed in any case. Or in the case of the Chatos, we have this complication that we just discussed. So they say, Olamai Chilufo. So in that case, what substitute animal are we talking about over here? So he says, Chilufe Toda. This applies to substitutes for the Thanksgiving offering. Now, what is the problem that we have over here? All right. The Thanksgiving offering, which by itself would seem to be not a very complicated thing, right? It would be simple, you know, to simply offer another one if something happened to the Todah, right? But there is a complication. The complication is that in the Torah, in addition to bringing the animal sacrifice, it has to be presented over bread, and there are 40 pieces of bread that you have to bring. You have different types over there, some fried in mubeches, some fried in something like in the form of wafers and things like that, and 10 of those have to be chametz. This is the only sacrifice, except for the shtei halechem, that requires chametz.
10 of the 40?
Huh? Well, because they say that you have to bring 10 of each category.
Oh.
So since there are four categories mentioned in the Torah, it's in the Parsha Vayikra, you'll find it, in the case of, you know, Todah, okay? So, over there, you know, it speaks about, you know, let's say, in the machbas, if it's brought to you, and let's say, in what we would call a frying pan, in other words, not a shallow pan, another type is made in a deep pan, so that obviously it's going to appear different in form and everything else, and so on. So, and, as I said, chametz. Okay, so these have to be brought together with the Todah. These are what we call Lachmei Todah. In other words, the breads that have to go along together with the Todah. Now, what would happen now? This is what they're asking, okay? They say, let's see, I have to keep my finger on the place over here. All right, yeah, the Tzonei Rabbi Chiya is Rabbi Chiya taught the following. He says, Todah, Shenis Avra Bet Burasa, what would happen? You designated an animal that you're going to bring as the Todah offering, the Thanksgiving offering, and it got mixed up with another one that you decided to use instead as a replacement for it. Maybe the other one got lost or something like that, and you don't remember which animal was which. Okay? Then in that case, and then one of these two died. Okay? So, in that case, can we sacrifice the one that is left alive as a Todah? So he says, no. Kaverto ein lo takon. There's nothing that we can do now with the one which is left alive. Why? Hey, he loved it. What is he going to do? Likorvo, let's say he sacrifices it, right? The likoriv lechem bahador. And he also brings as the sacrifice the bread offering that has to go together with it, right? Then in that case, he says, Dilma, maybe it's not right. It's not yetzer. Why? Because Dilma temurahi. Okay, maybe it's the substitute, and the substitute cannot have the lachmei todah, so you're not fulfilling the obligation of what you're supposed to do when you bring a todah. So let's say the korbo b'leilechem. Maybe then in that case, let's just sacrifice the animal and not bring the bread. So it says dilma todahi. Maybe this was the original todah. So since we don't know whether it's one or the other, right? Right. So the whole cave and the love basak rovahi, right? So now that we see that it cannot be sacrificed, then in that case, Kerala Mute Lomeli, then why do I need another pasuk in the Torah to say, and it includes this or it excludes that or something like that. So Omer Rav Sheshes says, the Olam, in truth, he says, the miyute chilufei oila ushlomi. We're really talking also that the Torah text itself also excludes the substitutes for the Ola and the Shlomim. From what? From what we had originally started to talk about. And what was that? When do you have to bring you in order to fulfill your obligation? The Hocha B'mayaskinah, what are we dealing with over here? So he says, Kingon She'ovru Olav Shnei Regalim. Let's say two Yom Tevim had already passed by, right? Let's say you were supposed to, you made a pledge, you know, to bring it before Pesach, but you didn't bring a Pesach, and you didn't bring a Shavuos, okay? The Human, and all of a sudden, what happened? The animal developed a blemish, a mum, okay? No, that's the case, you're not allowed to offer any animal with a blemish on the Mizbeach. Torah specifically prohibits it. Okay, it has to be tomim. It has to be in a perfect state. Okay? So, in that case, the chililo al echad, the over al regalach. Okay, chililo means that he made this animal chulin. In other words, what did he do? He went to the Beis HaMikdash authorities and he said, look, my animal that I originally wanted to offer up as a sacrifice, right? And by virtue of the fact that he had already been makdish the animal, in other words, he set it aside, right? And he said, I want this to be, what is, let's say, shlomim, okay? So, in that case, what's going to happen? So, the temple authorities tell him, okay, you pay the value of what it is, right? And the animal now becomes chulin. That's what it means. In other words, the animal now is no longer in a state of sanctity so that you can eat it as a normal meal or something like that. Not as a sacrifice, but as a regular meal. Okay? So, this is what he did. Now, the question is, you set aside another animal, right? Because you want to fulfill the pledge that they made that you're going to bring shlomim. And the original animal had already had two festivals pass by and he still had not fulfilled the obligation, right? So, the Ovar Olav Regel Echad. Now, one festival passes. In other words, from the point of view, chronological, would be the third festival, okay? So, Salkodat Echamino, if you should happen to think that ho'il mekayach kamo ko'osi, inasmuch as this new animal, right, has come in order to replace the first one, right? So, kiman, the overall law of gimel regalim, then we should say that it's as if three regalim had already, three festivals had already passed by, and therefore you are in arrears, right? You have violated the commandment of lo sa'acher, right? You should not delay. So kamash malon, therefore, this teaches us that that's not so. In other words, if you have a substitute that you're going to bring, then that first festival, the regal echad, which would have been normally number three for the other one, but it's only the first festival as far as this is concerned. So new count all over again. Okay. Yeah. Right. Thank you. Takes a lawyer to know the right terminology. Okay. All right. You know what? I think we'll take a halt at this particular point and then continue next week from over here with the statement, because we still have to plow through this.
The last time I was...
Yeah, we got a minion. Good. We can say the Kavshrama. All right. We are now on the 4th of August, 1999. And we are continuing on Rosh Hashanah, Daf Hey Omid Beis right now, about two-thirds of the way down right now. Okay, so now we continue over here, and now the next statement is about Rabbi Meir. Well, a Rabbi Meir, the Omar Kevin Shavu Olav Regal Echad, Oyve Bevalta Acher, right? So, remember, we had different opinions as to how much time is given in order to fulfill a pledge that you made, right? The prevailing opinion, as we saw, is 3 festivals, okay? And even there, it was not altogether certain whether we meant simply 3 festivals or whether we meant 3 festivals, kesidron, meaning that you always have to start from Pesach. And therefore, if, let's say, you made a vow before Shavuos, let's say, then in that particular case, you have not 3 festivals, but you have 5 festivals, because you have Shavuos and Sukkot, right? And then you have again Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, because you have 5 festivals actually in order to fulfill it, okay? Now that was one opinion. We had another opinion, Rabbi Eliezer, who said that you have 2 festivals. But if you remember, it was Rabbi Meir who said what? He said, right, Rabbi Meir, the Omar, came and showed Allah regal echad. Inasmuch, even if only 1 festival has already passed by, over Baal Ta'achir, then in that particular case he has transgressed the commandment which says you are not to delay to fulfill your pledges. So, Ma'ikal Amema, so what can you say in that regard? In regard to what? Of course, the answer is in regard to the fact that, you know, what would happen if you got a substitute animal? How much time do you have then in that particular case? Okay? So we saw that that was a problem. So we'll see Rabbi Meir's answer in just a moment. I just want to give Greg, good evening, Greg. Good to see you. Here's a copy of the page that we're on. And the Yotza Hashem, the page that we'll go to next. Pardon me? Yeah. I don't want you to begin saying Dayedo, you know. Okay. All right. So, what will we do then in his case where he claims, you know, his opinion is that even if you let 1 festival go by, you already have violated the fact that you did not fulfill your pledge. So he says, Omar Rava, so Rava says, Hochva Ma'eskinen. He says, okay, if we want to connect this statement with Rabbi Meir's, here is a case. Kigon Shehuman Besocha Regel, let's say that in the middle of Yontif, I mean, of course, we're not talking now exactly about Shavuos, because that's very difficult, but let's say that, you know, the animal became, it developed a blemish in the middle of Pesach, or in the middle of Sukkot, you know, where you have time, okay? So, the chilulo, naturally, as we already said before, what happens if the animal develops a mum, and when it develops a blemish, you cannot sacrifice that animal, because the Torah has said, called mum lo yiyabo, no blemish whatever can be in the animal that you sacrifice. And so naturally, what is the thing that he did? So chilulo, as we already explained, as we heard on the tape before, he redeemed it from the temple authorities, he made it chulin, and instead he wants to replace it with an animal of his own, a new animal, right? So, this happened in the middle of the Yontif, the Ovar Olov HaRegel, and then Yontif came to an end, and what happened? He still didn't fulfill the pledge that he had made. So, Sal Kodate Chamino, if you should think that we say as follows, and inasmuch as the second animal is coming now to replace the first animal, and so therefore, when the festival has passed, and obviously he didn't yet fulfill his pledge, so we are to say that it is as if the entire festival, you know, has passed for him, and therefore he is now guilty of violating the commandment Baal Ta'achir, you should not delay to fulfill your pledge, right? So in that particular case, Chumash Malon, so we say no, just as in the previous case, the case of the Chachomim, who have 3 festivals we talked about. So the same thing with Rabbi Meir, he would also give him another chance and let one more festival go. Okay, now they take the pasuk and they find, you know, the pasuk says, "Lo sa'achir l'shalmu," right? You should not delay in fulfilling it. Because Hashem will you know, will require it of you, right? And if you don't do it, hoyu b'chol chet, right? Then if you don't, then you will be in sin, okay? It will be a sin unto you. So we already saw that they took practically every single word and they made it into a different type, right? Oila, chatos, shlomim, todah, and nedarim and nedavos and things like that, and even as far as charity is concerned, and leket and shikha, and so on, all these obligations that you have, and maaser, you know, you have just a certain amount of time to fulfill it, and you have to fulfill it within the time which is specified, because your word that you pledge should be considered holy unto you. So now they take the next part of the pasuk, and it says, "Vayobechol chet." It will be a sin in you, meaning that if you fail to fulfill it, right, then in that particular case, this will be your sin. But v'lo bekorbon chet. But if, let's say, you have to substitute a different animal, then it's not the animal's fault, but it gives you that much more time, as we say. So the sin will be not, you know, the sin has nothing to do with the animal, the sin actually has to do with you. You are ultimately responsible for what you pledge. Don't blame it on the animal. So they say, but this pasuk is used for other interpretations, as for example, other authorities who derive the following teaching. The Tanya, as we have learned, this is in the Baraisa, it says, Acherim Omrim, that there are others who say as follows, Yochul Yehei Bechor Shover Shnosoye Kibsule Emudoshin B'Yiposim. Let us assume, Yochul always introduces, I mean, if you imagine that this and this and this, right? All right, let us suppose. All right, so suppose as follows, that let's say you have to bring a firstborn animal. As we saw, what is the din concerning a firstborn animal? The answer is it has to be given to the Kohen, right? And then the Kohen sacrifices it and he eats of it. Okay. This is what the procedure is as far as a Bechor. All right. So, let's say as follows. We have a case of a Bechor, and instead of offering it within the first year of its birth, the way it should have been offered, to the Kohen. In other words, don't delay in giving the Kohen his due, right? You should have done it that year. So, shall we say then that now that a year has passed, so this animal, the Bechor, is to be considered like other offerings, other sacrifices, which are called Psulei HaMikdoshim. Psulei HaMikdoshim means that an animal developed some kind of it violated a law concerning the time that it should have been offered. Okay? Yeah. Not necessarily, a blemish might be one thing, but it might also be a question of time. Okay? In other words, let's say you have a certain amount of time that's supposed to be offered, and then, you know, the day passes, let's say, when it's supposed to be, and you didn't do it. Okay? All right. But at any rate, there are various psulim, and then concerning psulim mikdashim, in other words, is that if it's a sacrifice and it has been invalidated, then in that case, what happens if you still persist in sacrificing it? So in that case, this is a sin, it's a transgression, because the apostle becomes apostle, it's no good anymore, right? So, let us assume that the same din, that the same law applies, what, to a Bechor? If a year has passed since the animal was born and he still did not fulfill his pledge of bringing it to the Beis HaMikdash and giving it to the Kohen, so Talmud Lomar, so the Torah says as follows. It says, V'achalto l'fnei Hashem l'kecho. It's a pasuk in Aser Teyaseh. We'll be reading it this week, in fact, in the Torah. Okay? It's written over there, you shall eat it before the Lord your God. What shall you eat? Ma'asar degoncho, the tithe that you bring for your grain, tiroshcho, your wine, your tzarecho, your oil, uvechoras bekol chovetz onecho, and also the firstborn animals of your cattle and your sheep. Okay, so makish bechor lemaser. We see in this pasuk that the bechor is compared to maser, right, to the tithe. Ma maser eino nifsal mishon el chaverto, just as a tithe does not become possible, doesn't become invalidated by delaying it from one year to another. So our bechor eino nifsal mishon el chaverto. So likewise, the bechor also, this is an exceptional case. This too, because of its comparison to the maser, therefore falls under the same law, and it will not become invalidated by virtue of the fact that it was not brought during the first year, but it's brought after the first year. Okay. Now, the business with the maser, I have to explain to you. You see, in the Torah, all right, remember that maser, there are different types of maser, okay? But we are talking now, as he mentioned, the pasuk over here, that maaser that we call maaser sheni, which means that in the first and second and in the fourth and fifth years of the cycle, you know, the 7-year cycle, so you have to bring these to Yerushalayim and you consume them over there. And if Yerushalayim is too far away for you to bring them over there, then in that case it's written v'nosata b'kosef, right? Exchange it then, you sell it for money, right? And then v'nosata kesef b'yotcho, then in that case you have to literally tie up the money in your hand. In other words, you put it into a little bintala, you know, a little bundle, which in those days they didn't have purses and stuff like that, so they used this, okay? And you have to bring it to Yerushalayim, and there you spend it, v'chol asher ta'aved, afshecho, whatever your heart desires, b'bokor, b'tzon, right? Cattle, sheep, yayin, sheikhar, wine, strong drink, in other words, against the schnapps, whatever, you know, that, and, you know, and you rejoice before the Lord your God with all these goodies, and then, of course, the Torah says this. It's not only you, but remember, you also have to include, you know, the yosan, the ger, the amona, you know, everybody, you know, the levi, make everybody happy by inviting them to participate in the festive meal. Okay. So, therefore, we're now equating, yes. Now, Maaser, there's another law in the Torah that we read towards the end of the Sefer Devarim in Parsha Kisavo. Over there it is written that Kisachala la'aser is called Maaser towards the Lashona Hashlishis Shanas HaMaaser. In other words, they say that you should complete the giving of the various maasers, the various tithes that you have to give in the third year. So that therefore, if the Torah says that, it means already that, and if you fail to give maaser when it should have been given, then you could save it up and do what? You have to do it during the third year, and finally at the end of the third year, at that particular point, by then you have to have all your accounts straightened out. So that therefore, if we're going to make a comparison because of the fact that the Bechor is also mentioned in the same pasuk, then it means that in the case of the Bechor, unlike all the things that we were talking about before, like the Chatos, the Yoshem, and this and that, and the Oilo, you know, and the Todo, you name it, okay? That unlike those, in the case of the Bechor, you have up to 3 years in order to be able to fulfill your pledge. But again, the idea is, but why should you delay? We hark back again to what Rabbi Meir said. Rabbi Meir says, even if one festival goes by already, you are already guilty of that. Well, it's something to think about, because we're not finished yet with this matter. Okay.
Extenuating circumstances.
Right. Okay, we still have a few more pages over here to pass out. Yeah. All right. This is Hay Amid Beis that we're finishing right now. And here,
one more copy,
okay.
Would that apply for membership dues those days?
Well, the membership dues were to pay a half a shekel, you see. Every Jew is required to pay a half shekel, right, to the temple treasury. But, in addition, then, know, you bring offerings of all different types, however. Of course, that was also an obligation. But, you know, the value of the obligation, things like that, this already was left to, you know, what a person could afford to give. Okay?
Well, contrary to what Rabbi Meir says, you have 3 years to really fulfill it.
As far as the Bechor is concerned.
Yeah.
Right. As far as the Bechor is concerned. But not as far as the others. Because there, you know, they are more lenient by saying that you have 3 festivals, okay? As we've already said, and of course, as we see, under, you know, the accepted one, if you say it has to be Kisidron, then it means that you have not 3 festivals, but very often you have maybe even 4 or 5 festivals in order to fulfill it. Okay. Okay, all right, so now, he says, Itzterich, I need also this interpretation, okay, about the Bechor. Why? Because Sal, I'm the third line from the bottom, okay? Sal Kodate Chamino, let us say that I reason as follows. Hani Mili Bechor, right, the reason why, in the case of the Bechor, it is not subject to the same rule that we have already mentioned, but it has a will of its own. We say, well, the reason is maybe the law of Bar Hatzohu. Aval Kochim, the Bnei Hatzohu, Ninhu, Eimor Lo, Lirtzu, Komash Malon. Okay. We might argue as follows. Okay. Normally, when a sacrifice is brought, the Torah uses the expression that this sacrifice should be L'Ratzon Lochem Lifnei Hashem, which we usually translate as that it should be that so that the Rebbeinu Shalom will be very happy, you know, with what you're doing. But what so literally means will, okay? So that, therefore, the interpretation is, how do we know that the Rebbeinu Shalom is happy with you? He's happy because he's willing to accept your offering, right? That gives Rebbeinu Shalom Fagadigan in this particular case, okay? So, this is the Ratzon, and therefore it works that the Rebbeinu Shalom in turn shows his favor to you, right? Because of the fact that you are willingly offering the sacrifice, and therefore by offering the sacrifice, you are thereby achieving atonement for the Rebbeinu Shalom for whatever it may be. Now, all right, we know specifically that what? In the case, for example, of an ola, a burnt offering, okay? So there, the interpretation of the Chachomim is what sins does the ola, bring atonement for, okay? So we say it brings atonement for mitzvahs asay, in other words, an affirmative commandment which you neglected to fulfill. As we know, the average affirmative commandment, either you do it or you don't do it, right? Except for 2 affirmative commandments where the punishment is kores, namely to observe the Pesach, that you have to do it, because if you don't, then it's, you know, v'nichras adev shahi, right? And the other one is bris milah. Okay, you have a boy, you have to circumcise that son, otherwise, you know, you're violating, all right. But with the others, I mean, let's say that, you know, you're supposed to do this, and you fail to do it. So, can we shmeis you in order to do it, you understand? We can't shmeis you for these things, okay? So, that being the case, then you still have committed a sin in that you failed to fulfill what you should be doing. And therefore, you would offer up a burnt offering, an ola, in order to ask the Rebbeinu Shalom to please forgive you that particular lapse on your part, okay? So that's what the ola brings. The chatos and the Oshob, right? They are self-explanatory. We've explained again and again that the Chatos is brought for sins that you committed inadvertently. You didn't realize, for example, that it was a violation of Shabbos, let's say, all right? or you didn't realize maybe that you had eaten something treif when you thought it was something kosher or something like that. You understand? So for that, you atone by bringing a chatos, a sin offering. Okay? And the oshem, as we said, there are certain specified transgressions in the Torah where the Torah itself mandates that the sacrifice to bring in this case is the oshem. All right. So we know these things. Now, in any case, if you bring any of these sacrifices, then in that case, it's the rotzon lechem. Okay? Same. Now, in the case of shlomim, well, you want to make peace between yourself and the Rebbeinu Shalom, so that too has the idea of the rotzon lechem, right? That the Rebbeinu Shalom will be happy when you fulfill this action, because not only is the Mizbeach a partner, but the Kohen is also a partner. He gets what we call the the Matnas Kehuna, right? The gifts that, like Hezroa, Al Choyayim, Hakeva, right? So these are things that are given to the Kohen, and the rest of the animal you can enjoy together with your family and everybody whom you invite. So everybody is there sharing in, and it's all the Ratzon. But what about the Bechor? Nowhere does the Torah mention the idea of Ratzon in the case of the Bechor. It doesn't mention it. So that this is what the argument is as follows right now. That, okay, maybe the Bechor is an exception, not because of what you said before, namely that it's compared to what? To Meiser, right? In the same pasuk, and therefore it is subject to the same rule that just as Meiser can be dragged out for 3 years, so likewise the Bechor too, you have up to 3 years in order to fulfill the pledge. Maybe there's a different reason why Bechor has been singled out. It's been singled out because of the fact that the idea of Ratzon, right, is not mentioned in connection with the Bechor. Okay. You give it to the Kohen, and the Kohen has a nice meal. But it's not a sacrifice like, the other sacrifices. It's something for the Kohen to enjoy. Okay? All right. So, on the other hand, Kochim, which are, sacrifices like whether it's the Chatos, the Yoyla, the Yosham, the Shlomim, you name it, Toda, whatever you want. These are all Kochim. Some of them are called Kochim Kalim, and others are referred to, as more, more difficult ones, okay? So, at any rate, they are subject to the idea of Ratzon. So, shall we say that they will not be acceptable to the Beit HaShalom if what? If we delay bringing them, right? So, Kamash Malon, therefore, we learn that this is not so, that where our Chachomim came and they said that you can extend a certain amount of time, anything brought within that time limit would still be acceptable to the Rebbeinu Shalom. Okay. And what would happen, let's say, if you decide to fulfill your pledge after the three festivals have passed? Would they be acceptable or not? Are they puzzle, or would they be acceptable anyway as sacrifices? The answer is they would be acceptable as sacrifices in any case, but you don't get the same credit for having fulfilled it. It's like, for example, we have...
Every day, once the 65th.
Yes. We have, for example, a rule, those of you who have studied brachas, there's a certain definite time, let's say, for shachris, okay? That, for example, Krishna should be recited within the first 3 hours of the day, because this means counting from when the sun rises, although according to others, they start even earlier than that. Okay, but let's say from when the sun rises, you have 3 hours in order to fulfill Krishna, right? In the case of Shemoneh Esrei, they tacked on another hour, so you have the first 4 hours of the day, okay? But what happens if you woke up late? Does it mean, therefore, that you don't daven Shabbos? Or you don't daven, Shemoneh Esrei? The answer is no, not so. You do it, but you don't get the same credit with the Rebbeinu Shalom as if you had done it in the proper time, okay? So, I mean, if a person is very, as we would say, machpid, he wants to be very careful and exact, you know, and fulfilling a mitzvah the way it should be, then, you know, he wants to make up, he wants to make every effort in order to daven within the correct time span and, you know, not delay. But if you don't, then, as I say, it doesn't mean, therefore, that you don't daven. It means that you do daven, but you'll get credit, but not the same amount of credit. Okay. All right. So now we're ready now for the next page. Va'akate. And still it says, Midaben Azai Nafke. We have another interpretation, and that is the interpretation of Ben Azai. The Tanya. As we have learned, Ben Azai Omer, Ben Azai says, Oso. Now the only problem is we have to know what pasuk is he referring to. So the answer is he is referring to the law which says Pigul. Now, what is Pigul? It's not the name of a place in Paris. Plus yeah, Pigul. Yes. Okay, it could be two things, right. There is one of two possibilities as a general rule. As you said, if you sacrifice something, but you have the wrong intention in the sacrifice, or the Kohen who is doing it has the wrong intention at the time. He was supposed to sacrifice it as an ashrab, let's say, and instead he sacrificed it as a chatos or something like that, vice versa. Okay? That's pigul. That's one source of pigul. The other form of pigul is that, you know, you are supposed to eat the sacrifice within a certain specified amount of time. It may be, for example, and this is easy to check up in Ezeo Mekomen, it could either be the Yom V'Laila Ad Chatzos, which means that day, because the sacrifice obviously is brought during the daytime, and then that same night until midnight, that's one time. Another case, you have the Shnei Yomim V'Laila Echad, which means during the day, the following night, and then the following day until sunset. Now, what happens if you eat after the specified time? Then in that case it's pigulhu, and it's no good. That at that particular point you have violated the law which says you're not to have it. Okay, so the word oso, it is mentioned in connection with pigul. So Ben Azai said as follows. He says, why does it say oso? So he says, Lefishinemar, inasmuch as we have another pasuk which says Lo sa'achel shalmo, you know what we've been busy with all along, namely, you shall not delay in fulfilling the pledge that you made. Shomea ani, then am I to understand? Af me'achar nid af me'acher nidro bevadi rotze, that if a person brings his neder, in other words, he brings his pledge late, that it will not be acceptable to Rabbeinu Shalom, right? So Talmud Loma, this is the reason why the Pasuk says, Oso. Oso, in other words, Pigul. This is below Yevotze, right? It will not be acceptable to Rabbeinu Shalom. But the Ein Me'achen Nidro below Yevotze. But if a person brings his pledge later than he should have, then that will still be what? It will still be acceptable to the Beit HaShalelem, as we've already indicated before. Okay? Now, Elo Becho Chet. Now, we have the Pasuk says, Velo Yeyev Becho Chet, right? That you will not have any sin. So now he gives another interpretation to what is the meaning of the word Becho. He says, what is Bechor? See, did I skip something? Yeah, right below, because I see the same words again and again sometimes. Ela Bechor Chet. It says, the sin will be yours if you fail to bring it on time, right? Below Beishtachor Chet. Don't blame your wife. She should not be the one to suffer because you didn't bring it on time. Okay? Now, why do they mention it? Okay, that's a good question. Why do they mention it? You got a good question. All right, so I have to tell you, this is based upon a pasuk that we have in Mishnah. Some of you have the text, you know, that I handed out. If you take a look on the right, he was very, very nice in supplying the psukim, which enter into the discussion. Okay? Right. And you see that pasuk, it says, Im ein lecho neshalem, right? If you don't make good what you pledge to give, right? So lama yikach mishkovcha mitachtecha. Why should he take, literally, your bed from underneath you? Now, I think it might be interpreted that, you know, let's say you owe money to somebody, right? And you fail to pay him what it is that you owe him. So the pshat probably would be, why should you put yourself in a situation where they're going to seize your household goods, so to speak, in order, you know, to fulfill what you owe. But that's not the way the Chachamim darshened it, okay? What did they darshan? They darshan as follows, that if a man has stolen money, think of that's what we're talking about. We're not talking just about, you know, that you owe somebody $100 or something. We're talking about a man has stolen money. And of course, you know that in the Jewish law, stealing means that you've got to repay.
Right.
Not going to jail, but repay. And not only repay, but there might be twice as much, or triple, whatever. But okay, you have to repay. So, if you fail to repay, so who is going to suffer as a result of it? Your wife will. So why should your wife have to put up with suffering because you failed to fulfill your obligation?
How is she going to pay for it?
Yeah. The answer is with suffering, illness, whatever it may be. Well, and this is the idea, okay?
Right. Have to go to work to help them pay.
Well, in those days, yeah, some women went to work, but most of them didn't, okay?
Modern times,
right. Right, yeah.
Now,
it's a problem, I'll tell you, with joint property, you know, these
fine,
days.
What you're implying is that the punchline will be angry.
That's right.
Send you serum.
Right, right. So that, this is the idea. That she'll suffer your serum and so on because you failed to fulfill what you owe to society, what you owe to the person whom you have wronged, and what you owe to society. So he says, before hate, right? Let it not be, you know, taken out on your wife. If we are to think, oh, we'll be Omer Rabbi Yochanan, inasmuch as Rabbi Yochanan said, the Taman, there are those who say it wasn't Rabbi Yochanan, but it was Rabbi Elazar, right? Ein ishto shel odom meisal im kei mevakshim imen imnomom v'yein lo, that a man's wife does not die except when he owes money and they ask him to pay that money that he owes, the Anglo, and he doesn't have it because, you know, he spent it all and he doesn't have what to pay, you know, what he had stolen. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, in Anglo Chol Shalem, right, that if you don't have what to pay, Lama Yikach Mishkovchim Tachtecho, and as I said a moment ago, they take the word Mishkovcho, literally your bed, but they take it in the sense of your wife. Okay, why should she have to suffer for you?
Right, right.
So, okay, this is a drash. It doesn't mean that's necessarily going to happen that way, but still, you can see how seriously they take the fact that if you have pledged to pay somebody, or if you owe somebody because you've committed wrong, you've embezzled, you stole, whatever it may be, why should your family have to suffer because of it? Think twice before you bring yourself into a situation, in other words, where something like this could be the result. And I think if we understand it from that point of view, then we've learned something from the drash that we see over here.
Yeah, but why should the wife be killed?
No, she's not going to be killed.
No, it's an innocence.
But she is going to suffer. This is the basic idea, that she will suffer because of the fact of what her husband did.
Why should she?
I mean, we all know that, for example, somebody becomes a robber, an embezzler or something in the family, right? Doesn't the family suffer because of it?
I think he's trying to ask what was her guilt.
No, it's not that she had guilt. At least we're not stressing that. I mean, sometimes we know that there are wives who make such demands upon their husbands, you know, that unfortunately they are tempted to do the wrong thing. We've seen that too, you know. But here we're assuming that it's not that particular case, okay?
It is nice here that the wife suffers or the family suffers, but he may be a relative to the family, but he suffers.
Oh, I see. You're taking a sense that he doesn't suffer.
Right. Except the fact that somebody in his family is suffering. If he suffers, you know.
Okay.
He's the one that did it.
So tell me, is he going to be able to hold his head up in society when people know that because of what he did,
his wife,
his children, they all suffered because of him?
It happens today.
It happens. It shouldn't happen. I agree with you that unfortunately there are such scoundrels walking around. I agree with you. All you have to do is to read the Jewish press, the Aguda pages, and you see there are people like that. Right. I agree. But still, does this mean that therefore every man is doing this? Of course not.
You can read the daily press too.
Pardon me?
You can read the daily papers.
And the daily papers too, to a certain extent. Yeah, okay.
But if you drive it that far,
right?
If you drive it to bring it to the nth degree,
Every
punishment he gets, his family will suffer.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Right.
Where do you draw the line?
Where do you draw the line?